artificial intelligence. From 2001 Space Odyssey to iRobot, stories have been dealing with the possible harms and helps of this technology for decades. The reality is, however, we already have AI controlling many aspects of our lives and businesses. It may not yet be as smart as the stories in the films made it out to be, but it does control a surprising amount of things in our lives. And while we're not going full Terminator just yet, issues like the recent RoboDebt crisis show that AI can be used in detrimental ways. This is why Monique Mann, senior lecturer at Deakin University, is calling for stricter regulation on AI technology. We've got her on the phone to find out a little bit more about why this is such an important issue. Monique, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Wonderful. First of all, thank you for joining us this morning on this Thursday morning. Thank you for taking time out to speak with us.
No, you're welcome. I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah, look, what is the level of complexity that AI technology currently has?
It really depends on the specific application that we see, and it's being applied in a range of different sectors and fields. You mentioned the RoboDebt affair in relation to sort of the automated decision-making, data matching and issuing of often incorrect debt notices to welfare recipients. That's one example, probably not so much of AI per se, but certainly of automated decision-making. But we're starting to see a range of other applications that are becoming a bit more sophisticated. So, for example, the New South Wales government has very recently started using AI image processing and recognition to surveil all drivers driving on the road and spot whether or not they're using a mobile phone. And so this involves expanded public surveillance with mobile phone detection cameras, and then they use artificial intelligence to automatically detect a rectangular object in the driver's hands and classify it as a phone. So that is becoming a bit more complex, particularly when we think about automated sanctioning involved with also sending out fines. And then the other big application that we see, which has been very topical and subject to a very immense scrutiny around the world, has been automated facial recognition technology. And this is because it has a real potential to undermine human rights and be used for widespread public surveillance and to suppress public protests, as we've seen in places around the world.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's something that has obviously it's being used in parts of Asia and China. How far off do you think we are in Australia from having something like that, the facial recognition becoming more widespread?
Well, we already have a national facial biometrics matching capability, which houses all of Australians' passports and visa photographs within the Department of Foreign Affairs, and there's been moves towards the expansion of that to also include everybody's driver's license images as well. So very recently, the supporting legislation for this arrangement went before the Parliamentary Joint Committee on Intelligence and Security, and basically they said that you need to go back and redraft the laws so they're built around privacy, transparency, and have some robust safeguards. So they actually knocked it back. In some sense, however, I think the introduction of laws around this this capability, inverted commas, actually is a good thing because it brings it in to some legislative purview, whereas at the moment it's operating kind of independently of that. Looking internationally, there have been many calls for a moratorium or ban on facial recognition, and most recently here we've seen Ed Santow, the Australian Human Rights Commission, also recommend as such. So we're not quite at the extent of what we're seeing, for example, in China, where you have the social credit system expected to monitor 2 billion citizens this year. But certainly we're on, a slippery slope in that direction.
Other than someone like yourself and human rights activists, who else are kind of not fighting this, but I would say who else is making sure that the regulation is being taken seriously?
Well, at the moment, there's kind of a limited regulation. We have really limited regulatory capacity as well when we consider the funding of our regulators. Key officers would be the Office of the Australian Information Commissioner, the Privacy Commission, commissioners across states and territories. But we've also increasingly seen The Australian Competition and Consumer Commission have been becoming very active in the area of digital platforms and regulating digital platforms. So I think that's a very interesting development. And then you have a range of civil society groups. So you have the Australian Privacy Foundation, you have the New South Wales, Queensland Councils of Civil Liberties, Liberty Victoria, Electronic Frontiers. So there are a range of different groups, but I'm not necessarily sure how effective we actually are in the face of this.
Yeah, it's almost like it's kind of the new Wild West, right? This AI space and the regulations around it. Are there places we can look to for examples of good legislation in the AI space?
Well, I think in the first instance, one of the biggest challenges for the Australian context is that we lack any enforceable human rights at the federal level. So that makes things like really difficult just to even start with, because when we do look at other Western democracies that do have or are starting to propose regulation, it's really founded in fundamental rights. And so in absence of having actually any fundamental rights in this country, we're kind of starting from a backwards position,
We're starting from a very low base, it sounds like.
Yes, and look, human rights are not limited to issues of technology. They cut across the board. But in this context, I think it's very important. But if we look at the European Union, they've recently made a set of proposals for how to regulate artificial intelligence. And they're adopting a real risk-based approach. So they will assess applications of AI as being either low risk or high risk. High risk if they have a likelihood of causing death or injury or have an impact on human rights, such as the rights of privacy, equality, liberty and security, freedom of movement and assembly, social security, presumption of innocence and so forth. And then high-risk applications of AI would face greater regulation. And this could extend to everything that the data is used to train the artificial intelligence models, record keeping, transparency, testing for accuracy, and requirements for human oversight. And then there would also be a process of certification and insurances to ensure that the AI system is actually safe and doesn't lead to dangerous outcomes. And that would be much more aligned to what we see in other fields, such as aviation, such as pharmaceuticals, medical devices, where we have these technologies that are, you know, really quite capable of causing significant harm. I would also just note, though, that even low-risk applications of artificial intelligence can do real harm. And I think an example of that is recommendation algorithms, like, for example, the Google search algorithm.
Oh, my God, algorithms, right?
That is discriminatory too. And we've seen that in significant work that's shown, particularly against women and particularly against women of colour, what recommendation algorithms bring up.
Oh, my God. Monique, thank you so much for your time this morning. I feel like we could keep talking for another sort of 20, 30 minutes about this black hole that is AI and the regulation around it. But unfortunately, we've run out of time. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We really appreciate all your input.
Excellent. Thank you for having me and have a fantastic day.
You too. Bye.